Good afternoon, and welcome to Reminiscing, a program of nostalgia and recollections of the good old days, times that we remember as happy and maybe a little simpler. We know we can't go back, but we can certainly reminisce. This is your volunteer reader, Mary Ellen Stepanek, and you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona, your 24-hour reading station. This first story is entitled A Private Picnic. Eventually, the truth came out. This was written by Audrey Korn. The new people moved into the house behind ours in April 1951. We lived in Brooklyn, New York back then. "I hope they have a little girl my age," I told Mom. "That would be nice," my mother agreed. A row of tall hedges separated the new people's backyard from our backyard. Whenever I heard voices, I peeked through the hedges. I saw a man and a lady. I never saw children. After a while, I stopped hoping. That year, the weather turned unseasonably warm on Memorial Day. Mom opened our kitchen window, and I heard voices, lots and lots of voices. The new people must be having a party. They chose perfect weather for an outdoor barbecue, Mom said. "What's a barbecue?" I asked. "It's when people cook outdoors. If you stand near the open window, you can smell their food cooking," Mom explained. I walked to the window. "It smells good. What do you think they're cooking?" I asked. "Oh, probably hot dogs and hamburgers," Mom said. "We have company coming today. Why don't we have a barbecue?" I asked. "I'm sure Grandma and Grandpa and our other guests would prefer roast chicken and mashed potatoes and green beans," Mom said. I watched my father put in the boards to make the table big enough for the company. I watched my mother peel the potatoes. Preparing for visitors was boring. "I'm going outdoors to play. Call me when Grandma and Grandpa get here," I said. "Make sure your dress stays clean," Mom warned. The smell of barbecue drew me to our back hedges. The new neighbor was cooking hot dogs and hamburgers for his guests. I moved closer. My mother never cooked hot dogs. She said they weren't healthy and would give me a stomach ache. I watched through the hedges as the adults and children wolfed down their hot dogs. Many returned for seconds. No one looked sick. I edged closer and closer. I must have walked right through the hedges because the man at the grill was suddenly holding out a hot dog. "Mustard?" he asked. No one answered. "Mustard?" he repeated. He was looking straight at me. "Yes, please." He spread a narrow ribbon of yellow mustard along the hot dog and handed it to me. "Thank you," I whispered. The new neighbor was already putting a hot dog on a bun for the next child. He had invited a lot of guests. Maybe he assumed that I belonged to a business colleague, or maybe to a friend of his wife. He didn't question me. I carried my hot dog back through the hedges to my own yard. I didn't dare let my parents see me, so I sat on the damp ground beneath the thickest part of the bushes. The hot dog tasted delicious. My crime went unnoticed until the following Tuesday. Tuesday was ironing day. Mom spread my freshly laundered dress across her ironing board. "What's this?" Mom pointed to the big yellow stain that ran down the front of my dress. "It looks like mustard," Mom said. "But I didn't serve our guests any food that needed mustard." Mom treated the stain with her usual standby, vinegar. The stain had had several days to set. The vinegar did not work. Neither did Mom's repeated scrubbings. My Sunday best dress was ruined. By the following May, my family and the new neighbors were friends. Mom and Dad accepted an invitation to the new people's Memorial Day picnic. When Mr. Thorsell, that was the new neighbor's name, offered me mustard on my hot dog, my mother leaned forward to hear my answer. The mustard on my dress was beginning to make sense. "No, thank you. I don't like mustard," I lied. I couldn't fool my mother. "Mustard will be fine, Jim," Mom told Mr. Thorsell. That year, my hot dog tasted even better than the year before. Maybe because I did not need to sit on the damp ground with hedges poking in my face. This was a private picnic by Audrey Korn. This next story is entitled Saturdays with Mom. It didn't matter where they went or what they bought. This was sent in by Katie Martin. In the 1960s, as a small child, I looked forward to my Saturday with Mom. One of eight children, I was given a chance to spend time with Mom alone when it was my Saturday. Sometimes we rode the bus downtown into Minneapolis, Minnesota. Other times we took the car. It was always a trip to remember. We would start out shopping. Often, Mom would buy our clothes when we were with her. Other times, we would be looking for something for one of my brothers and sisters. It might be a coat, a dress, or even a pair of shoes. Back then, all of the Boy Scout and Girl Scout uniforms and so forth were carried by the department stores. I always wanted to look at all the genuine Girl Scout camping equipment, like the camping knives, shovels, and axes. When lunchtime came, we would go to the top of Dayton's department store to eat in their wonderful restaurant. It was quiet there and gave us a rest from the continuous ringing of telephones and the loud coded bongs of their paging system. I always ate the same thing, grilled cheese sandwich, plain chips, and a cola. Their grilled cheese was always grilled to perfection. It was perfectly brown, cooked in butter, and so delicious. Their glasses were always so clean that they shone in the sunlight. I can hear the ice clinking and rattling as it moved in that clear glass. Even the potato chips seemed perfect, round and salty. Each one had a little crunch. Sitting there with my mom on Saturday afternoon, I always thought I was the luckiest child in the world. Mom and I usually didn't talk about school or that type of stuff. We would talk about what we needed to buy for each family member. Mom always asked my opinion. More often than not, my ideas would be incorporated into our shopping plans. After lunch, we would go to the other stores downtown. As we walked between the stores, there was always time for peeking in the store windows. The colors were so bright. There was everything you ever dreamed about or even thought about on the other side of those windows. During the holiday seasons, I would have to be dragged from those windows. You see, everything was animated then. A train would run around a Christmas tree. Someone would hand someone else a present. The lights would twinkle in a particular tree. I can even remember Santa Claus with his ho, ho, ho. At Easter time, the Easter Bunny would move. Every holiday was a new delight. My eyes would be as big as saucers. My smile would fill my face as I watched all the movement in those windows. To a child like me, this was a time of wonder, a time of dreaming. There was no better time. Mom would finally drag me away from the windows so we could continue shopping. Our lists of things to buy were always longer than the time we had to shop for everything. The last thing we would do was go to Donaldson's basement for the best chocolate ice cream cone. It was twirled round and round. The clerk always seemed to sense my excitement and make that ice cream so tall that it would almost fall off the cone. Of course, I had to lick hard and very rapidly to keep that from happening. Mom and I would discuss all of our purchases on the way home. I often had to take things out of the bags so we could make sure what we had gotten. All of this just added to my excitement. I couldn't wait to get home and show my father and my brothers and sisters what we had purchased. I never cared if the purchases were for me. It just wasn't important. The trip itself and the time spent with Mom. That was the real gift. This was Saturdays with Mom by Katie Martin. Here's the story that accompanies the good old days in the kitchen, full of recipes. Now, this is entitled A Blossoming May Day Celebration. The spring holiday was always a day for sharing handmade bouquets and enjoying tasty picnic foods. This was written by Jennifer Broadstreet Hess. A light, warm breeze blew joyfully through my bedroom window that Saturday morning. Mom sat on the edge of my bed, lightly caressing my curly tendrils. Her soft voice gently awakened me. "Honey, wake up. It's May Day today." Her bright blue eyes sparkled with anticipation. One of my mother's favorite days of the year was May 1st. She had once been a May Day princess as a young girl. As a result, May Day celebrations in our home were always festive. Mom let us bypass our regular Saturday morning chores, which made my brother and me ecstatic. She was busy in the kitchen preparing food for our picnic luncheon. Excitedly, I picked up the telephone and dialed my best friend, Missy. I couldn't wait to invite her and her younger sister over for the May Day festivities. The heavenly scent of Mom's lemon blackberry bread filled the kitchen as she set the loaf pan on the stove to cool. Missy and Marcy arrived quickly at our back door. They must have ridden their bikes faster than the wind that day. Mom handed us scissors and a large woven basket. She instructed us to go outside and cut flowers for bouquets. Arm in arm, we burst through the front door, giggling with excitement. Fragrant snow-white spirea blossoms, cheerful tulips, and pastel peonies surrounded the front of our house. We carefully trimmed the flower stems, filling our basket. Bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, we rushed up the front steps into the house. Mom had been busy prepping our table with brightly colored construction paper, ribbons, and glue. She patiently showed us how to arrange small bouquets of flowers. Then we rolled and glued pieces of pastel construction paper into cones, adding ribbon hangers. We carefully placed each flower bouquet in our homemade cone-shaped baskets. Mom loaded us up in the car. We stopped at homes of friends and family, where we surprised them with freshly arranged May Day baskets. Our hearts were full. At the park that afternoon, we enjoyed a tasty picnic of Italian sausage zucchini casserole, rotini salad, and other delicious dishes. I invite you to try one of my hand-picked recipes served over the years at my own family picnics. There's a camaraderie that goes into sitting down and talking about our day over dinner with others that makes it so special. This was A Blossoming May Day Celebration by Jennifer Broadstreet Hess. Now here's an item from the Bits and Pieces section of the Good Old Days magazine. This is entitled, You're a Truck, and that was sent in by Diana Vickery. The ink was barely dry on my first driver's license when my best friend, Jolene, and I embarked on a 700-mile road trip. Her husband-to-be was completing officer candidate school, and the young lovers planned a wedding in the Aberdeen Proving Ground Chapel in Maryland. I, her maid of honor, was going along to help with driving. Jolene owned a 2-year-old 1965 Ford Mustang and was planning to pull a rented trailer loaded with everything she owned, clothes, household goods, and wedding presents. Neither of us had pulled a trailer before. We departed from Jolene's house in Aurora, Illinois, with a crowd of her relatives to see us off. They didn't show it, but they were all worried we would get in trouble on the road and speculated about exactly when we would turn back. They were right to be worried. We made it around the bottom edge of Lake Michigan and onto the Indiana Turnpike with no problem. When we spotted a rest area, we pulled in with nary a thought about how we'd pull out. While Jolene tried to back out, I helped by waving my arms, but the car and trailer went all cattywampus and we panicked. Before we had a mutual meltdown, sure that we'd never make it to Maryland, a truck driver, an older guy of our parents' generation, ambled over. "Having a little trouble, ladies?" he asked. With Jolene's blessing, he got into the driver's seat and deftly backed the car and trailer out. Remember, when you're driving a car that's pulling a trailer, you're a truck. At a rest area, you follow the truck's arrow and park where they do. Then you don't need to reverse to leave, he said. With profuse thanks to our knight of the road, we got back onto the turnpike and made it to Maryland. The wedding came off without a hitch, and 57 years later, the young lovers are still together. This was You're a Truck by Diana Vickery. And here's another story. This one's entitled Daddy Could Do Anything. My dad, Jimmy P., was a pleasant man, not known to raise his voice, even when one of us six kids was out of line. In fact, his given middle name was Pleasant. He worked a dangerous job on the railroad for over 40 years. He was awake at 5 a.m. and at work from 7 a.m. until 3 p.m. To my knowledge, he never missed a day of work. His co-workers referred to him as the hardest working little man on the railroad. Dad had an eighth grade education and then was pressed to quit school by his father to help support their large family. Even so, Dad was literate and knowledgeable about many things. He had the neatest cursive handwriting of any man I ever knew. He could draw detailed pictures of locomotives and other intricate subjects. Whenever we boys had a problem, such as a fender bender car accident, he never chastised us, but instead planned a trip to the junkyard to find a replacement part. Then we went into the backyard where the damaged car was parked under the shade of two wild cherry trees, and he showed us how to repair the vehicle. He always seemed to enjoy doing such things. What a relief that was for us three boys, who had more than our share of repair needs. One day, after we came home from school, when Dad had a day off, we found that he had made a magic mailbox post. Our mailbox was mounted on a chain post pointing up to the sky. His creative ability had produced a chain welded at each link so that it stood upright like a wooden post. No one else in the neighborhood could boast of such a thing. It stood there for more than 50 years. Although he's been deceased for 35 years, we've never forgotten our father's legacy of hard work or orderliness. He always managed to keep things around our small home neat and repaired. That legacy has followed each one of us kids, as our six homes were always just like that. Thank you, Daddy. And this was Daddy Could Do Anything by Rod Hale. This next story is entitled, What's Wrong with Being a Spy? All the cool gadgets, not to mention pretty girls, fueled his aspirations of a secret life. This was sent in by Joe Palermo. Growing up, I wanted to be a secret agent. I had no real idea what they did, but based on what I saw in the movies, I would get to drive cool cars, kill bad guys with clever gadgets, and hang around with pretty girls. My influences were James Bond films, and secret agent Napoleon Solo in the TV show The Man from U.N.C.L.E. The movie, From Russia with Love, taught me that some pretty girls couldn't be trusted and might try to kill you. She could prove helpful if, just before you kissed her, yuck, you could see the reflection of the enemy sneaking up behind you in her eyes. That would give you a chance to spin her around to stop a bullet and save your life, though it definitely ruled out a second date. I fed my dream by getting my parents to buy me as many spy toys as possible. There were many to choose from in 1965. The centerpiece was the Secret Sam at the Shea case, which contained a camera inside that could secretly take pictures without opening it. The photos didn't remain secret for long, as they had to be dropped off for development at Walgreens or Photomat, where several teenagers might sneak a peek. There was also a button on the side of the case, which, when pressed, would fire a bullet through a hole from the gun inside. The weapon could be assembled into a mini rifle containing a periscope for seeing over walls. It also had a red missile where a secret message could be stashed and then fired from the gun. Sadly, when one of my friends used the periscope to peer over our fence, I fired the red message missile directly into it, shattering the glass mirror and destroying its future resale value. Not that that idea was on my radar at the time. Fortunately, my friend's eye was still there, and he was unharmed. My most unusual gadget was called Six Finger. This was basically a plastic finger that could fire various projectiles. Based on its large size and color, it worked well for a Caucasian adult, but stood out a lot if you were a little kid or a person of color. It had a ballpoint pen attachment and could also fire a secret message missile. It seems there were many secret messages to be communicated back then, though I never knew to whom or why. Later, I also got the James Bond attaché case, which contained a plastic throwing knife in the side. Instead of firing bullets, it had a booby trap. A cap would fire if someone tried to open it without the right combination. I usually forgot the numbers and triggered it myself, as no one else cared enough to look inside. As I grew older, my spy aspirations dissipated when I realized the profession could be hazardous to my health. Working as an adult businessman, in the spirit of my early dreams, I always kept my real attaché case close, though it never contained anything more dangerous than my lunch. You've been listening to Reminiscing on Sun Sounds of Arizona, Arizona's 24-hour reading station. This is your volunteer reader, Dr. Mary Ellen Stepanek, wishing you good afternoon and good memories.